On this episode of the Ottawa Windbags, we talk with Las Vegas radio legend Steve Cofield. Plus, we talk about the biggest areas of improvement, the five things the Raiders must fix this offseason, and we go through all 11 top potential wide receiver targets for the Raiders. Who could be our next number one wide receiver? And we love when you subscribe, rate, and comment on whatever platform you're listening on. All right, here we go.
I got a dream of winning a Super Bowl. I got a dream of being in a Pro Bowl. I'm really not into dreams anymore, okay? I'm into the nightmares. The Raiders!
Caught! Touchdown! Raiders!
You're listening to the Ottawa Windbags, an audio attack from the Silver and Black. Here are your windbags, RJ Clifford and Juan Soto.
Yeah, it is another episode of the Ottawa Windbags. RJ Clifford, Juan Soto, let's have some fun today. I was very happy to hear, Soto, that you have a belly full of beef jerky because... I had to learn through your solo show on YouTube that you get hangry when we do these recordings. And so
you know
I expect a much more upbeat, happier, fully nourished Soto for today's show.
You see me chomping Skittles before we would go through the rundown.
I just thought it was your sweet tooth. Oh, I just thought you just really wanted cavities.
Oh man. Little did I know that.
Oh. Well, another guy who's as big of a health nut as you, Aaron Rodgers. Everyone tuned in this week to his Pat McAfee interview that always does. He's like, is he going to retire? Is he going to say he's moving? Is he going to make a demands? Didn't do any of that. Instead, we learned that he did a 12-day, I think I'm pronouncing this correctly, Panchakarma cleanse. It's a 12-day cleanse, and you're wondering, what the hell is that? I'm like, well, it's a cleansing procedure that involves five procedures. The first one, Vimana, which is therapeutic vomiting or induced vomiting, Virachana, purgation therapy or forced diarrhea to purge the bowel and cleanse blood toxins, the sweat glands, kidneys, stomach, small intestines, colon, liver, and spleen, Basti, medications given by enema to cleanse toxins through the colon, Nasya, the elimination of toxins through the nose. It is done by nasal administration and medications, which can include various oils, dry powders or herbs, fresh juices, ghee, G-H-E-E, and ghee, medicated deductions in milk. And then the last one, Rectamushkshana, detoxification of the blood. So basically, one of the best quarterbacks in football spent the last 2 weeks shoving oils up his ass trying to get healthy. Are you signing up or what?
Just get one of those special sodas from CVS. You know, just get one of those. Like, hey, you want some cherry 7-Up? You ever play that trick on somebody? I got some cherry 7-Up.
Not even that. Just give him some Taqueria with some extra red sauce. You are cleansed. You'll be hollowed from the inside out.
So hot. That's no good.
It's like chugging battery acid.
Yeah, I'll clean you out quick.
I mean, Aaron Rodgers is. I'm like, you know, we're both from California. Like I'm pretty Californian. Like, there's not like one fad diet I haven't tried. Like, I eat kale. I do yoga. I consider myself, you know, pretty open to like, oh, this is, you know, not mainstream, but, you know, a billion people in India, it works for them. I'll give it a whirl. This is way out there, man. This is.
Dude, I've done the whole frog fucking shit that like frog. Crap. They got the little boils on their back. It's like venomous. Have you done that? Like poisonous frog crap?
Is it like The Simpsons where you lick it and it's like you're on
mushrooms? No, but you don't lick it. It's like they scratch your arm and like they put the dots on your arm and shit. And like that's how you get and like it's supposed to be like hallucinogenic and shit like that. It didn't really do anything for me because I guess I'm just dumb or too fat or something. And I've tried anything. I've eaten a bunch of mushrooms with our buddy in drinking the Grand Canyon. I mean, I'll try anything.
Yeah. See, like, that sounds normal. Like that's like what I've heard of. But just like shooting oil up your ass for 2 days as a cleanse.
What I was getting at though is you eat enough the mushrooms like afterwards, it will cleanse you out.
The other way, right? It's a double cleanse.
For sure. Oh, yeah.
Cleanse you mentally and cleanse you the other way. So if there's one thing, you know, we don't know what Aaron Rodgers is going to do next, but we do know that he's
going to involve his rectum for sure.
He's shitting clean this week. That's what we know. We know that Aaron Rodgers is shitting clean. So that's our update from Green Bay. So I've been thinking about this ever since the season ended, the last month and a half or so. And we look at exactly like what do the Raiders need to improve on the most? And not so much like personnel-wise or coaching-wise, right? It's data-driven problems that the Raiders have had. They've had a problem for a while, and some of these problems they've had for decades. Like, it's ingrained in the culture of the Raiders, some of the problems that they've had. So I thought of the top five things, in no particular order, that the Raiders need to work on this offseason, and the numbers clearly dictate it. Some of them lead to the other. Some of these problems, I feel like Josh McDaniels and company, just naturally how he does things, these can go away. And a couple of things he's going to have to make a very obvious effort to get some of these going the right direction. So the first one, red zone offense.
It's a big one.
Been a problem. Been a problem. We can move the ball, boy. Boy, can we move the ball between the 20s. Yeah, we're flying, right? We're moving. We get to the red zone. 31 of 60. That's a 52% on touchdowns, right? 60 trips to the red zone. Only 31 touchdowns. That's 26 in the NFL.
Yeah, that's not good.
Right near the bottom. And remember the last time we were 1-5 in the playoff game in the red zone.
Yeah, we could think of really trash teams in the NFL, like really, really, really bad teams. You could think of like probably like 7 or 8 of them. That means like 2 of them are better than us. That's pretty bad.
It's weird because you don't think of red zone like as extremely specific, right? Like a really trash team could have great special teams. A really, really awesome team could have trash special teams, right? Like Green Bay, number one seed, their special teams was awful, garbage. Which is why they grabbed Rich Bisaccia to hopefully, you know, he's got his hands full now in Green Bay, turn those special teams around. You know, kicking game, like there's certain, like you rarely see a really good team with like terrible run defense or a just awful passing offense, right? Like the meat and potatoes of a football team, if you're really, really good, you have that, right? Red zone is kind of a weird in between. It's not like a super unique special teams, but it's not the bread and butter, right? It's different enough where what you do normally doesn't automatically transfer to red zone. And so I think a lot of it's the hangover of John Gruden, who's just super predictable in the red zone, right? And that was just like big part of it, right? And it's just like, it's like he just didn't. It's almost like the red zone was different enough to him where he's just like, all right, here's the, like the 15 things I do here, and not let me use like all this time and all this creativity of this off, like this, frankly, a good offense that I've amended. I'm John Gruden, but I won't change it enough for the red zone. I was just like, well, let me just pull back and like do what I know.
Yeah. He was just okay with getting, like, you know, he said a punt is a victory, like a punt is a win.
Yeah.
We didn't turn the ball over. That's a win. It's like, wait a second. No, that's not the modern NFL. Modern NFL, you got to put up points. He thought kicking field goals was a victory.
Yep.
And we'll see how much of that residue sticks to Carr, because he had that mindset as well. You know, he in the red zone, you have to be a little bit more willing to fit balls into tighter windows. Giggity. The windows are a lot smaller. The timing is a lot crisper. And you have to be able to be a little bit more willing to take a little bit more chances in the red zone and trust the players a little bit more in the red zone, because it's you know, it's a lot quicker timetable in the red
zone. I think we should have ran the ball a lot more in the red zone too. I think we just like abandoned it, and it was just like, all right, little simple passes, you know, predictable little outs, the predictable little slants, and we'll just do that. More running, more play action. Not having Darren Waller for 5 games obviously hurts a lot in the red zone. He should be an amazing red zone target.
We never used him in the red zone anyway, bro. He was never a red zone, big red zone. I mean, yeah, shoulda, coulda, woulda. So should Bryan Edwards. We don't throw him the ball in the red zone either.
Edwards doesn't get separation, though. Like, he should have been a red zone target, too.
He's a bigger, stronger player than the guys covering him. You just throw the ball up.
I mean, so we screwed up on that end of the field. We weren't much better on the other end of the field.
Yeah, it's tough.
Red zone defense, not good as well. We allowed 35 touchdowns, which is the 11th most. So you think, okay, that's not good, but all right, outside the top 10, 11th most touchdowns, you know, that's not an atrocious number until you realize that we only defended 126 plays in the red zone.
That's quick.
126 plays in the red zone. That's the second least amount of plays that a defense had to play in the red zone. So not only did offenses not get there very often, they scored super fast.
Yeah,
like, that's so bad. They only had 126 trips to the red zone, and we still gave up 35 touchdowns. Oh, no, I'm sorry. Not 126 trips. 126 plays. 126 plays. 35 of those plays turned into touchdowns.
Yeah, my computer like mine. That's like every three plays is a touchdown.
Yeah. They don't get there that often. Because, like, the defense was, you know, like, they were very good about not giving up big chunk plays, right? That was just Gus Bradley's defense, right? Mm-hmm. Don't give up the big play. Keep everything in front of you. Play simple. Play fast. So we're good about that. But I think it's kind of the John Gruden issue, but inverted. Whereas Gus Bradley's like, well, just keep everything in front of you and play fast. It's like, well, when you're dealing in split second moments and you only need 4 yards, you can't keep everything in front of you. You got to be more aggressive in the red zone. Otherwise, they're just going to, all you need is those like 3 yards, 7 yards, like little quick passes, little, you know, quick runs off the edge. And it just goes against Gus Bradley's philosophy.
Yeah. It's just one of those things where we had two coaches that were sound and they knew football, but they were very stuck in their scheme and they weren't very dynamic as coaches. And I think that's what the difference is with the coaches we have now, is they are more dynamic and they're less scheme specific and they're more, roster specific. Mm-hmm. These are the guys that I have. This is how we can do the best as far as our roster, and this is what we can do best against the opposing roster.
Also, it kind of comes down to just leaving like your four down linemen just to do what they do and rush, right? Like that doesn't jive in the red zone. You got to get bigger, right? You got to stuff gaps. You got to play man more often in the red zone on defense. And we just not what our defense was built for.
Situational football. You know, you have to know what situations you're in, and just wasn't our big strong suit.
Another big issue, turnovers. Turnovers are a problem. -9 turnover ratio, right? So for all the takeaways we got, you minus that by all the turnovers we gave away, we ended with -9, sixth worst in the NFL, which is crazy how good we were. And still with our, because of all the stats, like you think, like, what's the stat that that's most mathematically correlated with winning games, right? Obviously the score, number one, right? Duh, scoring points. Number two is turnovers, not passing yards, not penalties, not, you know, rushing yards, not turnovers is the number one stat that's most correlated with winning games, and we weren't good at it.
Mm-hmm.
14 interceptions, 10 fumbles, tied for the seventh most in the NFL.
And that's just 10 fumbles lost. We recovered a lot of fumbles. Seven of those were Carr fumbles lost, unfortunately. We'll see how that works out, because it could have been a lot worse, because the first, 6 weeks of the season, we didn't lose a fumble, and we had fumbled a lot more than that. Maybe at least one a game where we recovered them all.
We only had 6 games this season with a positive turnover differential. 6 out of 17 regular season games, not counting playoffs. 6 out of 17 regular season games with a positive. We had a couple at 0. Remember how many turnovers we gave away in Kansas City? The second game?
6, right? Was it 6?
5.
Oh, yeah.
5 turnovers. This is the other crazy part, though. Our 4-game win streak at the end, we were -2 against Cleveland, 1. -3 against Denver, 1. -2 against Indy, 1. And then +2 against the Chargers.
Well, that's what I was saying. Nuts, is right? I was, like, super nervous about what was going on, is because, I mean, this is not, I'm not trying to slight the guy, okay, so relax, But Derek Carr was turning the ball over left and right those last the last games. He was fumbling. He was throwing a lot of interceptions. And
he threw one pick against KC, one pick against Cleveland, one pick against Denver, none against Chargers. It was a lot of fumbles though.
But he fumbled in each of those games. Mm-hmm. And so he had two turnovers in all those except for the Charger game. He fumbled in each one of those games as well. That's why it's like I love the fact that we were pulling these games out. But if you take a look at the way we were winning these games, last second wins and the turnovers that we were getting and how bad we were in the red zone defensively, how poor we were playing and the penalties that we were, it's like you can't expect to win in like a bigger sample size. You know, of course, you flip a coin 100 times, you're going to get streaks of like 7 or 8 or 9, sometimes even heads in a row. But like, it's going to even out to like 50-50. And, you know, that's what I was trying to say about, you know, having these
that's
outlier
what made that
stats.
That's what made that late season run for us so magical. Like, negative turnover differential and still we won all those games. Like, There was something magical in the air, man.
And yeah, there was a couple of things too. Was that it was the red zone offense, it was the red zone defense, it was the penalties that we were giving up.
And it's not like we were getting lucky, right? It's like, you know, you think like, all right, wow, you got this incredible run of like, you know, recovered all of these fumbles or like all this, you know, all the penalties went your way. Like, no, everything went against us, and we still pulled off.
The thing is, it's like
the best streak of the season.
If things didn't turn around, we were going to get that. We were going to lose those close games. It just finds a way to even out if we didn't find a way to shake something up.
So that's turnovers. And the other side of the coin, takeaways were bad, right? So not only are we giving the ball away too much, we're not taking the ball away that often. Same, you know, -9 turnover ratio, 6th worst in the NFL. We only had 6 interceptions last season.
4
dead
drop.
Last. Dead last in the NFL. However, one bright spot in all this. We had 9 fumble recoveries, which is 9th best in the NFL. So we were pretty good about recovering the fumbles, but we just didn't get interceptions. And again, Gus Bradley defense, don't be aggressive. Keep everything in front of you. And we had a bunch of drops. Like, our DBs need to be on those jugs machines this offseason.
Oh, yeah. I just like saying the word jugs.
Yeah. Jugs machine. That was my nickname in college that I invented right now. And this is one of the things I think that just not having Gus Bradley will improve. Whether the defense gets better or worse than last season, we'll find out. Optimistically, it looks like it should be better. But just not even just schematically, but just like philosophy of football, we should get way more interceptions next season just because any defense, any DB is more aggressive not under Gus Bradley. We'll get beat more, but we should get more interceptions.
Not necessarily, but
schematically we should. Schematically, that's the give and take, right? Like, you give away less, you get less interceptions, but you're playing safer and you're giving up less deep, you know, deep passes, deep run plays, big plays is the philosophy.
Yeah, well, it all depends, because if you run a more opponent specific scheme. Where you're playing against the opponents, playing to their weaknesses, and you're forcing them into those weaknesses and forcing them into mistakes. You don't necessarily have to leave yourself open while still causing them to make mistakes. But yeah, I see what you're saying. But there's going to be a few things, a few of the groups on the team that are going to have to change their mentality a little bit. And the secondary is a big one.
Last one. Penalties. It's the Raider way. You get a lot of penalties, including the playoff game. So in 18 games, we had 131 penalties called against us. Second most in the NFL, behind only the Cowboys. We gave up 1,150 yards in penalties. That's a Pro Bowl rusher's season in penalties that we gave up. Not good. And again, I think, you know, if best case scenario, if it pans out the way it kind of people think it does, the quote unquote Patriot way, a more disciplined way, a Josh McDaniels way, just a more disciplined style of football, should put a take a giant chunk out of this number next season.
Yeah, it's has to start the very first freaking practice, man. These guys have to understand that there are consequences to not to making mistakes. You know, you can't, if you're not allotted, you're not given a credit to use up mistakes. Like you're, it's not okay.
Yeah.
It's just simply not okay to make mistakes.
A little random stat though. We had 106 penalties accepted by us, but so our opponents give up, you know, 106 penalties, which is about average. But we got 1,077 yards benefiting us. Second most. Derek Carr's like, that's just like X-Men sneaky power. Just like, I'm just going to throw bombs and I feel like this guy's not going to cover him right and get a PI. Like those. Yep. How many of those did we get? Like a lot.
15?
Like
at least one a game.
And they were, and like most of them were bombs.
Like 45, 50 yarders.
They weren't little slants. He's just like, oh, Zay Jones is double covered. I'm going to throw it anyway. And they're just gonna maul him.
He got his money's worth.
Yeah. That's a sneaky little power.
Yeah,
I hope he keeps it. I hope Josh McDaniels recognizes that. It's like, hey,
yeah.
If you see just the backs of the numbers, let a couple bomb, right? We're probably going to get a P, you know? All right. Coming up next, special guest is a guy that I was a radio host with on Sirius XM. He's a radio host in Las Vegas. A guy that knows Las Vegas sports maybe better than anybody. Steve Cofield joins us next. Joining us now, you can catch him on Cofield and Company and ESPN Las Vegas Monday through Friday, 3 to 6 p.m. Also, Cofield and Company Late Night Pod Wednesday and Thursday at 9 p.m. A Las Vegas, dare I say, radio legend, Steve Cofield. How you doing, bud?
I'm good. A staple of Las Vegas radio who's not been picked up by more talented people yet. Is that a good way to put it? You know what's funny about that is I've been told so many times when Major League Sports came here, I'd be in big trouble and the real talent would come to the market. So,
yeah.
I don't know what's happening.
Yeah. They're still hanging on.
Yeah.
Supposedly that means the Athletics. Once the Athletics, that's the turning point, right? Not a hockey team, not an NFL team. Once a baseball team's there, then you're screwed. I remember having this conversation with our guest and the guy that's on your show all the time, Adam Hill. Yeah. And I was like, what's it like working a market? This is back when there was no pro teams. What's it like working a market with no pro teams? It's got to suck. He's like, no, it's awesome. Because we literally just talk about what we want. Like, what's the national story? And then gambling. He's like, it's great.
That's what we did. National sports talk and gambling. And I will say now there are times that we have to force stuff in, which we shouldn't do, but because, you know, you got to get your Raiders fix or your VGK fix, even if there's nothing super scintillating going on.
And also working in Vegas, like if you would have told, you know, 14-year-old RJ, like you would have a job where you will be paid to talk sports while drinking beer in a strip club, I'd be oh my God, that's the best thing ever. How many shows do you do inside of a female strip club every year? Because it blows me away, Cofield, how good your gig is.
Yeah, we're a little down from where we used to be, so we probably do COVID obviously hurt it the last couple of years, but in a given year we could probably do 25. But honestly, we used to have years where we would do out of 260 we could do 125 in strip clubs, live show for 3 hours.
What the
amazing
fuck?
It's amazing. You know what? It's once you do it,
you're jaded already by it.
No, once you do it, you get. I mean, come on. There are guys who go to strip clubs to. I mean, this is going to sound crazy, to just go drink and then talk to the ladies every once in a while. They're not walking, walking around with boners the whole time. So once you're doing a show, you just do it. I tell everyone on the market, it's like a sports bar. You know, if you want to come in and act like a lunatic, I mean, there's just some women dancing and some of them might be topless. No big deal.
No big deal, he says. It's always funny to me how COVID was shut down the strip clubs, and it's like that's like not even top 10 diseases I'm worried about when I'm at a titty bar. But yet,
that is a good point. So again, I sound very desensitized and jaded, but no, it's been Vegas is freaking awesome, and we used to have, we had a gigantic budget for radio advertising with the strip clubs, but yeah, it's a good perk, and there was a lot more in the old days too, a lot more.
I bet. Yeah. Well, now that the Raiders are in town. I mean, it's been right. They just finished their second season, first one with fans. How much has Las Vegas like really embraced the Raiders? Because it's the tickets are expensive, but is it all just like you're already laughing, right? Like,
well,
internally, what do you make?
Yeah, it's, I think it's hard to gauge because so many people come from outside the market for the games, you know?
Yeah.
LA people and then Northern California people come in, and then there's Raider Nation beyond that, and then the opposing fans who are coming in. But I guess the best sign of how, well, how we're embracing it at the stadium is I would say most games were somewhere between 70-30 and 50-50 Raiders fans on the first number. Mm-hmm. On the ground, I don't know, man. I think they're going to need to be here for like 10 years. They're going to need to win. You're going to have a whole generation of kids grow up with them. And then I think like 10 years from now, there's going to be a lot of hardcore Raider fans here. But it's a weird town. It's just like you guys deal with, right? Yeah. I defend L.A. all the time because people outside of L.A. bash L.A. Well, one, you guys didn't have football after the Raiders, but especially the Rams left. So it's like a whole generation of kids, like they didn't have a football team. And then you have transplants like we do. Like this, the entire town are transplants. Like I already had a team. Everyone my age, we already had a team. But I mean, if they win, if McDaniels works out and Derek Carr is good for however long he's here, which is a good topic, right? No, more people are going to start rooting for him, and then you're going to see more interest in the local businesses, and bars will pick him up. But I can tell you right now, like a lot of bars, not that they won't put the Raiders game on, but it's not the feature game at bars. And I go to, you know, we go to football bars all the time to watch games. They're not the feature game yet. They just haven't been here this long. And like, it's funny, there are Raiders fans. Who's the guy with the freaking shoulder pads and the spikes, and he just went to the Hall of Fame? Where's number 57, whatever his name is, the Violator or something like that.
Yeah.
Not to disrespect him. But like halfway through the season, he was bitching and moaning about the environment at the stadium. And he's like, it's not loud enough here. These fans aren't into it. Like, dude, you just got here. You just got here. And here's the other thing. And like these Raiders fans who are coming in won't say it. Like, you also came to the market, and Mark Davis is like, yeah, man, by the way, can I cuss at all? I'll just say Mark Davis is like, fuck it. Whatever we can get for these tickets, we're going to get. Well, they set the prices at like $75K for a PSL, $35K. Well, who do you think the first round of PSLs are going to go to? It's wine and cheese people, man. They ain't freaking Raider Nation. They're not looking to brawl. They're not screaming their guts out. It's just, you know, it's going to take time. I don't know why I went into like immediately like, but well, fuck you, man. Vegas is cool. early in the season, it pissed me off when Derek Carr's like, man, we got to teach these fans when to cheer and when not to cheer. Like, bruh, half the crowd is cheering against you. You don't have to teach us. We've been betting football. We know about football. You're not going to teach us when to cheer or not. You know, tell Mark Davis to lock out the opposing fans, but you can't do that.
Yeah. Well, it's like, you know, like LA just won the Super Bowl and no one knows or cares. Like, I'm with you, right? Like, I'm with you. Like, literally the Rams just won the fucking Super Bowl in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
Nobody cares. Like, you ask around, there's no buzz in the town, right? Like, it's just how it is.
Well, I will say Vegas has the potential because we already have it. Like, there is a Vegas loyalty once you're here, unless you're one of these people who's, you know, bounces into the town. We have this big turnover rate where people come here and they can't survive. But the people who are here really like a lot of things about Las Vegas. And that's why the Golden Knights work. Like, the Golden Knights have a good core of fans. I mean, they buy their stuff. They're super loyal. They're all pissed off at VGK management when they move on from players and coaches. And it's like, yeah, that's the way hockey is. Like, no, we get to keep the same guys for 6 years. Like, no, you don't. But I mean, I could see, because the Raiders image matches Vegas, like, it, you know, 5 years, 8 years, 10 years, maybe it's even advanced. If they win at a high level, there's going to be a good Raiders fan base here.
Well, I mean, second year there, you guys going to the playoffs. I mean, the Knights got the Knights won Stanley Cup the first year.
First season.
Jeez.
They went there. They runner up. They went there.
Runner up. Yeah. Well, still, man, shit.
I know.
What the fuck you want?
I know.
You get kind of lucky over there, you know? Shit. Yep.
How much is that part of it with obviously, like, no matter what market you're in, winning helps, right? But is that a massive, like in LA, like if you don't win, no one cares.
Yeah, it's
you
massive.
You have to win in LA. Is it the same in Vegas?
Yep. It's massive in Vegas. And now there's a lot of competition, right? You know, UNLV controlled things here forever. So even when UNLV after Tark was kind of ordinary, they could still get crowds of 10, 12, 15,000. UNLV,
crazy.
I wasn't here. I got here in 96, but I can only imagine when this town was only like 700,000 people. It's like 2.3 million now. Mm-hmm. When this town was 700,000 and we were like this evil outpost of sin, and UNLV is like breaking all the rules and breaking all the norms, and you got this team that's up and down. I mean, it must have been so friggin' cool.
Get Larry Johnson on the phone. We'll talk to him.
I know, right? And those guys, I mean, those guys are legends, and people love, love, love them. But yeah, once you get ingrained in Vegas, there's going to be a hardcore following. I think we're a very loyal town.
I mean, it's also just
you gotta win. You gotta win.
That's the thing, right? Like, I wonder if Vegas is just super spoiled because the Knights went to the Cup in the very first season. Like, totally. imagine being like a 9-year-old or like a 7-year-old, right? And you're like, oh, there's a team. It's like, oh yeah, like we go to the Stanley Cup. That's just what happens, right?
Hockey's
like,
easy.
It's easy, right? Like, I waited 49. I was only 35, but like I waited, you know, 49 years for the Kings to win the Cup, right? Like, it's been like hockey was my number one sport in like middle school, right? Before I found college, it was like my number one thing. Like, almost my, you know, a third of my life waiting for this to happen. And it already happens with Vegas. You know, that's part of it too, is that Vegas is just so spoiled by the Knights. That's just like, oh, well, what? Huh? Out of the playoffs.
Yeah, they set the standard, right? Yeah. I mean, there are people here who are like, let's go Stanley Cup. Come on. Like, okay. Yeah. They're barely into their existence. Like, you don't get to go to the conference finals or Stanley Cup final every year. It ain't that easy. By the way, I will fire out the shot though. And I know it's not a hockey podcast, but I love the fact that the Kraken suck, right? That's what we. I'm not even like a giant hockey guy, but I was like, can we give credit to the team they put together? These guys drafted a brilliant team and fleeced all these other teams around the league, and the Kraken blow with basically the same rules. They couldn't draft the Knights, but beyond that, they're terrible.
Yeah, it was such a weird season. Like, yeah, not a hockey podcast, but like, it's not like the Knights got this all-star team. It's just, they just got normal guys that played all-star level. Like, they just, like, it was unbelievable how these guys, like, it's like, oh, wow, we just built a culture. What, in the last 45 minutes? Like, how did you make this amazing hockey team? It's nuts.
Yep. And you've noticed, like, a lot of the guys who left, there were some decent trades, right? Got some big guys back. But there were some other guys who left, and it was like, they're just ordinary guys. They just worked out here. They're kind of just, you know, run-of-the-mill dudes in their new spots.
I wonder if part of it is like, is it a trap game in Vegas for opposing teams? Because you're like in Vegas. Does it kind of, do you ever see that?
The Knights or the Raiders? What do you think?
Anybody. I mean, Raiders specifically, but there's obviously a larger sample size with the Knights.
Yeah. I think the first year, the Knights absolutely got the Vegas flu. Teams that came in got the Vegas flu.
Yeah.
Like, they enjoyed it a little too much. And if they didn't get it and show the effect on the ice here, their next stop after here, they might have been a disaster. So I think the NFL is so buttoned up, put aside the Raiders' problems this year away from the field, but I think the NFL is so buttoned up, and they're going to be paying attention so much, the guy's not jerking around, that there shouldn't. Maybe at the end of seasons, maybe, you know, when teams are out of it, then they might be dead fish when they come to town. But I think the NFL is so professional that you're not going to have too many guys jerking around.
Leave Alvin Kamara alone.
Well, I mean, it's a good example, right? The Pro Bowl means nothing. So Alvin Kamara was like, yeah, I mean, I'll go out and fuck around and we'll, you know,
beat the shit out of some guy.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they planned on beating some guy down, but
yeah,
I don't think it's going to be, a big home field advantage, you know, the Vegas part of it. So, and hopefully it cleans up eventually where we'll have like 70-30 fan base, pro Raiders for every game.
So I was Vegas is like a second home to me, right? I'm there 40 times a year, right? Love Las Vegas. And what I said, what I thought would happen is what happened to me. When I first started working in Vegas and just would work there 2-3 times a year, I'd go nuts, right? Like, oh, I have to work the next morning. I'm going to the strip club. I'm gambling. Yep. Like, I'm in Vegas. I'm acting like I'm in Vegas. 45 trips later, like every single weekend, it's like, yeah, I got my tie spot close by, stay off the strip, get to work, back to business. And that's what I thought would happen with the Raiders is like, oh man, they're going to go nuts. It's right. Like, well, maybe to start, but they'll live there. They'll not live on the strip. Like, they'll eventually get their act together. And I defended Vegas this whole time when people were saying like, oh man, they're going to go nuts. Yeah. And I defended them with Josh Jacobs first DUI. I defended them with Henry Ruggs. But then once it kept going and we had this conversation, like, I was literally texting you after Ruggs saying, hey, it's not Vegas's problem. This, you know, Ruggs was going golfing. Like, it's going to happen anywhere. And I remember texting you. I said, it's not like he was caught out in front of Dre's at 5 a.m.
Cue
what happened to Nate Hobbs. Caught out in front of Dre's drunk at 5 a.m.
Yeah.
Is Vegas to blame? Because you'll find trouble anywhere, but is it an issue to you?
Okay, so you will get almost no media people here to say this because they've all been hardcore firing back. It's not Vegas's fault. Yeah, we take a little bit of blame. This place can be crazy. Mm-hmm. And you notice, aside from Kamara, and I don't know how old the guys how old they were, the guys that he was hanging out with, but you do notice a trend of the guys with the Raiders who got in trouble, they were younger guys, all young. Right? Yeah. You know, Jacob's a younger guy. Hobbs is a rookie. Ruggs. I mean, I will say with Ruggs, and I don't know this has really come out yet, and I hope this is examined more now that Mayock is gone, but, you know, this whole, like, oh, he's a great guy. I mean, he did act like an asshole in his car a lot.
Yeah.
And there were reports that, like, he, you know, there were times he's driving like a lunatic. And if you guys have ever been to the facility, the practice facility, their main facility, their headquarters, like, it's in the middle of Henderson. Like, you shouldn't be driving 85 miles an hour on those roads either. And the road he got into an accident on is ridiculous. It's Rainbow.
Yeah.
And Tropicana. It's a complete residential area. But again, the whole link between all of them and Arnett, they were all young. And honestly, with Arnett, I guess, I don't know. I guess Mayock, maybe they had too much confidence in their evaluation, but, like, bro, you can't tell us afterwards that we knew Arnett had character issues and then you bring him here. It's like, you're asking for it.
You're asking to get fired.
And then Ruggs is hanging out with Arnett. Like, what do you think is going to happen? So, yes, I will defend Vegas. I think you get in trouble a lot of places, RJ. Right. And I've seen, you know, hey, you and I were, you know, I don't think I was part of it, but, you know, you can go to a bar in New York and all of a sudden, you know, guys are rolling around on the floor getting ready to brawl. You can get in trouble. I'm not saying that happened, but you can get in trouble anywhere, but it's next level here. And if you bring in guys who are a little susceptible, a little bit immature, they're going to get caught.
Yeah. I definitely feel like that has to be in the back of the mind of management moving forward. Yeah. Of like, that has to be part of the, not a major part of the equation. But it should be a part of the equation. Are we drafting character guys? Are we not? Do we have to organize some, like, I don't know what you want to call it, just like an awareness group? Like, they have all these, you have a mental health meeting, you have all these meetings, right? Is there some sort of, like, hey, call this number? Like, it, you shouldn't have to do that for adults, but I think that has to be in the back of the mind of everyone at the Raiders these days. Three players in 1 year period.
I think the Raiders have to be extra careful. Now, will they? I don't know. This was like one of my only issues with the Patriots brass coming in. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, Dave Ziegler comes from a program and McDaniels especially, where, you know, it was, I mean, they want character guys, but they also can be win at all costs. And we saw the worst case scenario with Aaron Hernandez, where they, you know, in some ways it kind of enabled him by covering for him for a while. Yeah. So I hope these guys respect what happened here already and kind of the dangers of Vegas. And they should be getting high character guys anyway. If you want to take a chance here or there, you can. But Vegas is different than Kansas City, and fuck, man, Kansas City, they're still getting in trouble, right? Yeah. They're still having issues. The freaking Reed son, you know,
Reed son, that guy killed his baby mama, right? And killed himself, right? Wasn't that a Kansas City guy as well?
I wouldn't blame on, you know,
I'm not saying that, but like, there's issues. Yeah.
Party time. Yeah. He had issues, but the Chiefs have kind of taken over that, you know, the Raiders for years with the guys, you know, they would, hey, let's bring in guys. We can deal with them. We can do the reclamation and we'll be wild and crazy. But Andy Reid, he has confidence that his system works and guys still get in trouble there. So
who's like the number one player in Vegas? Like, who's like the team's number one guy? Cause like Derek Carr is so polarizing. Hunter Renfrow is like the guy you want to root for, but I think it's Max Crosby. I think he's like Mr. Yeah. You think so in Vegas?
Without question.
Yep. Oh really? That dominant.
Yeah. I mean, he's good. He's got kind of an edge too. He's got the pit bulls. He's got the pit bull charity.
Raider tattoo. He's
super productive. He's immensely popular. And then, you know, Waller's not as outgoing, but Darren Waller is really, really popular. And obviously, this last year, I haven't seen a uniform tracking sales number, you know, chart, but I would assume Hunter Renfrow is probably doing really freaking well. So, and on Carr, here's the thing. Don't get caught up in, I'm not trying to sound lecture here, cause I got to remind myself of this all the time. Twitter's a tool, but it's not representative of an entire fan base or, you know, an entire world view on something.
Yeah.
So just because Derek Carr is really polarizing on social media in Raider Nation, I think your casual fan, he's a quarterback on the local team and he's good. So I think Derek Carr he does most things right. And you know, the other one, and you know, no one want to have to do this, but he did get a major bump up or feather in his cap with the way he handled his leadership role when all that stuff was going on with Gruden, you know, then Jacob, I'm sorry, not Ruggs, you know, then Arnett. I mean, he had to go out there, especially around the Ruggs thing, and speak day after day after day. So I think he scored a lot of points with people.
I hope I don't sound like super insensitive and shitty here.
Here we go.
It feels
like
when your two superstars are Darren Waller and Max Crosby. It's like I'm so happy that they're sober, got their lives in order. First as men, second, like they're clearly playing better. But like those are Mr. Vegas, the two sober guys. Like, what happened to like the Ken Stabler days? Are you like you're partying all night, throw four touchdowns the next day? Seems like kind of a waste. Should be the party guys being Mr. Vegas's.
Unfortunately, the party guys went a little over the line, right?
They went a lot over the line. They party too hard.
Ruggs, it's funny the way you mentioned it earlier. Like Ruggs was playing golf. Well, I mean, he was hanging out at Top Golf, and you can drink and drink. And then he followed that up by going somewhere else and drank more. So that was a bad mix. I mean, I'm sure eventually we're going to get some rock star guy, a quarterback or wide receiver or whatever, cornerback, you know, a big personality. But yeah, right now it's Crosby is a big personality, though. I mean, I know his story's turned into a really cool story because he was having alcohol issues, but his story is amazing. I mean, the fact that they got him that late in the draft, then he gets himself clean and then hits another level this year and with another big year. I mean, the guy's he's probably on the verge of getting some kind of monster contract for what, $17 to $24 million a year. So good for him.
How much are you buying into the like Mark Davis is broke and that's why we don't sign giant stars? Like by you know, NFL owner standards, right?
I don't buy it at all now. If that's the excuse now,
okay,
that's a crock of shit. And if I were Josh McDaniels and Dave Ziegler, and I know the Patriots brass didn't always break the bank, but if that they have some sort of limitations, that's ridiculous. Now, come on, Mark Davis is he's swimming in money. He might not be the most responsible with his money because he's really enjoying himself. And he actually bought the Aces. He bought the WNBA team. So I'm not sure that that's really a moneymaker. No, they have. Unless there's something we don't know about with all the Bedane stuff that makes him, he's still cash poor. I think they have plenty of money, but I guess we'll find out, right?
Yeah.
We'll find out. I mean,
big contracts coming up,
but here's the difference. Have you heard anyone say the debate over what you do with Derek Carr is, you know, are you going to give him 30 mil a year, 35, 40? And when we talk about it and when it's spoken about with media people, I have not heard one time that, oh man, they can't guarantee the money or they can't give the big bonus. Now you definitely heard that with Khalil Mack.
Yeah.
And I think it was the case with both Khalil Mack and Amari Cooper. Mm-hmm. Risk reward. And they were like, man, I don't know if we really have, you know, whatever it is, whatever guarantee we had to put in escrow, you know,
yeah,
we don't have 40 or 50 mil, 30 mil to put out there for these players. Now I think our situation has changed so much. They are making so much money. Keep in mind,
a couple $70,000 PSLs will turn your bank account around real quick.
Well, yeah, they have all those PSLs, right? Because I think they were trying to God, I'm gonna get the numbers wrong. I thought it was like $350 million expected from PSLs, and they wound up making like $550 instead. And then their suite sales were going so well. I think they started out and the initial number was like 111, and they wound up pushing it to like 133. And those things are super expensive. And keep in mind, the stadium that we built in partnership, right? The Vegas taxpayers in partnership with the Raiders and the Allegiant Stadium management is doing a brilliant job of booking lots of events. Like we have crazy shit coming up. First of all, college football wants to be here a lot. We just had WrestleMania. Mm-hmm. We're getting, are they called BT Bright or something? There's some K-pop band that's coming here. And I was like, oh, okay, that's cool. April 8th and 9th and 14th and 15th. I'm like,
and they're going to pack that shit. Watch.
Yeah, like, are they going to get 60,000 for K-pop four times? there's so many events coming. We have the
ACM. Metallica on Friday. I was thinking about going to.
Is that at Allegiant?
At Allegiant this Friday, yeah.
Jesus, I can't believe I didn't know that with McKinnell, right? I'm sure he's been blowing
that's
it up.
That's who told me.
Yeah, we have the country music show coming. I'm sure they're going to get like 30,000 for that. So it's all that money. Long story short, it's all the money that the stadium is now generating for Mark Davis and company as well. So they should have no cash flow issues.
Have you seen his fanny pack? His white fanny pack?
Right, he has a white
leather fanny pack.
Fashion icon.
He's swimming in money.
He is. Well, I think he spends a lot, but then he's thrifty on other things. So I'm pretty sure he did get rid of he had like a 93 Caravan for years.
He has a Mini Cooper caravan. Now.
Mini Cooper, yep. Yeah. I don't know if he travels for the haircut anymore. I know he used to go from Northern California to somewhere in like Central California to get the haircut. So
I get it just right.
Dude, he's a fascinating character. People didn't know this. But while, you know, he initially started building some like $15 million house on the west side of town in Summerlin. Mm-hmm. And then was like, I don't like the view, and it's not close enough to the facility. So he sold out of that, and then he's building like this. I'm sure you guys have seen the picture. It basically Super looks mansion, like yeah. Freaking, yeah, it looks like the yeah. stadium out in Henderson. So I mean, he's spending a shit ton of money. He's a fascinating dude, though. I still don't exactly know who he is and what his role, you know, in the organization is, but it's going to be worth the follow. I know that.
Well, he's got this weird, like, goobery behavior and look to him, right?
Acid wash jeans, baby. Those acid wash jeans.
I know, right?
Right? Like how he looks, obviously, one. Like, he looks like a giant baby Huey with, like, a bowl haircut. Yeah. And then, like, he looked like a little kid showing his friends his, like, Stretch Armstrong when he's introducing Ziegler and McDaniels at the press conference, right? He's, like, all giddy and stuff. So, you're like, all right, who's this goober? But he fleeced. Who's that Vegas billionaire that he, like, fleeced to get?
Sheldon Adelson,
yeah. Right? He fleeced him to get to Vegas. Yeah. Got the most money ever for a stadium out of a was it city or county or state? Right? We got $750 million. Yeah. Like, he's pulled some business moves. Yeah. Right? Like, don't be fooled by the gooberness.
And that all said, like, I don't like the numbers, but what the stadium's brought to the market is awesome, and it's going to get even awesomer. And I'll also say, you know what? If you're going to have an owner, you tell me how many owners in the NFL are relatable to you. Like, who do you
probably,
think would be
cool? Probably just Kraft for getting jerked off at a massage parlor.
I mean, he does. That's a good line. He does. And he does have a lot of young friends, so he must party. He must be cool. But he's also like 80. But like, and Jerry Jones seems the same way. Although it feels like he just jumped up like 15 years in age the last couple of years. He's starting to slow down. But beyond that, like, who? Stan Kroenke? Like, Kroenke's fucking Mr. Potter from goddamn It's a Wonderful Life. Like, he'll foreclose on you. Yeah. And a lot of the guys you don't even see. The McCaskies in Chicago. I mean, you got the lady is like 100. Her son, who, you know, it's a total nepotism life. He's like 73. Like, who's really relatable? Like, there's no Mark Cubans in the NFL. Like, Mark Cuban is cool. And, you know, you could see there, you know, he's drinking with Mark Cuban, but there's not many. And Mark, he's a strange guy, but I mean, I think you're like, well, like, hey,
his love for the Raiders is like,
he loves the Raiders.
Tangible, right? Like, he's like, he's just
like, to
like a
fault.
Fan, right?
To a fault. And he even said, true. I love the players. And you know, he had a line that was almost like kind of heartbreaking. I'm like, God, your dad was kind of a shithead to you. He said something to the effect of like, you know, my dad always told me I'd never be a good owner because I love the players too much. And I'm like, okay, well, Al, easy, you know? But to me, that's a little bit relatable. And the other reason he's relatable for me, and I defend him a lot on the air, is I feel like he's rich, but he's not like the ultra rich, like these sons of bitches around the league, you know?
Yeah.
Who run like evil companies. And we've heard stories too about basically they're like, Mark, shut the fuck up. Like, an owner's meeting, get out of here. You know?
Yeah. You see the owner's meetings, like, everyone's wearing a freaking like $10,000 suit and he's wearing a white Raider starter jacket and a backpack.
Got a shiny starter jacket.
I need that jacket. He's going to the first day of school.
The hair freshly cut. So I like him. He's very pro Vegas. So
yeah. Well, wealth is always, it's subjective, right? Like, you only feel rich or poor based on the people around you. You know what I'm saying? Like, you hear all the time, like, people growing up, like, yeah, we were poor, but we didn't know it because everyone was poor, right? It's all kind of subjective.
Hey, real quick, do you think? Where do you think Dana White is now?
Like, relatable, right this second?
Not relatable. Oh. No, relatable, not relatable. Does he still come off enough as a regular guy? I think he does with a lot of the fan base.
I don't think so.
I think he tries to,
but no, I don't think
so. I think this goes back to your Twitter conversation, where, like, on Twitter, he's public enemy number one, right? Fighter paste trash. You know, evil empire. He got his $400 million. Like, seriously, once a month it's brought up that he got artificial snow for his kid's birthday in Vegas one time. It's like, he got something that for his kid that no one else can, right? Yeah, but I think like, just general fan bases, very similar to Mark Davis. He just loves fighting. He doesn't love the players the way that Mark Davis does. Like, he doesn't love the fighters the same way. Yeah. But I think it just comes off as just like a genuine organic fan to enough people, or he's not as relatable as Mark Davis, but there's that part of it. It's fair to say.
By the way, one more.
Company is there a man towing the company line over here?
Did I say that was wrong? What did I say that was incorrect?
No, he's right. He's right. If you know, if you're on Dana's right side, if you're an average Joe, you know, he's still a regular guy. I mean, the fight against the fighters is kind of crazy. I don't know what's happened there. But subject for another podcast. But All right, I'm going to take over the podcast now. Is Derek Carr? If Derek Carr gets $35 million a year, is he still the people's quarterback? Is he still relatable? Or does he now put himself in a position where people are going to be like, dude, that's a big chunk of the team's budget. Time to win at the highest level.
You won't be relatable to Soto.
No, I mean, RJ likes to push this narrative that I hate Derek Carr. I don't hate Derek Carr.
Hey, you push yourself.
Nah,
pretty good
I don't.
Job on your own.
Look. I like when I come on the show. I like to be very objective, but RJ likes to push my buttons too. He likes to jerk my twist my nuts a little bit.
That doesn't sound
RJ.
Like me at all.
Yeah,
that
RJ.
Sound like me at all.
No, the thing is I feel like Derek Carr is way too inconsistent to build a team around to give him a huge chunk of your cap because he's proven that he needs a lot more around him than we've given him. To be successful consistently. That's how I feel. And if you give him that big of a chunk, you're not giving yourself a chance because he's shown you who he is over the years. And you've tried to make him that guy before. You try to make him that highest paid quarterback. You try to give him that huge chunk. And he's shown you that he can't be that guy to erase a lot of those mistakes, being that guy that eats up a bigger chunk. That's how I feel.
Like when we talk wins and losses and the Raiders in general, like, you know, or strip clubs or food or Soto's nipples, I get very impassioned, right? But when it comes to like the cap and salaries, I'm like an economics professor, right? To have a franchise quarterback in the NFL, the going rate is $35 million. Like that's just the economics of the NFL. Like it sucks. Like I don't want to spend that much cap on our quarterback either, but that's to have a franchise quarterback. Like that is the economics. He was the highest paid quarterback in football 4 seasons ago. He's going to be 15th next season. Like that's just where it's going. If we give him $35 million, it's going to sound like a lot now. Mark my words, in 2 seasons, it'll be a bargain. In 3 or 4 seasons, it'll be a steal. Like guaranteed. Damn. That's just how the math is going.
You're not getting blocked by Camp Carr, by Team Carr. You must be, you're safe. The rest of us are blocked, but you know.
Are you really? Yeah. Are you blocked?
No, I'm not. They don't even know who the hell I am. Adam Hill, our buddy, he's blocked. Much of the media in Vegas is blocked by everyone in Camp Carr. So
yeah. Do you think his brothers help or hurt him? I know it's hard. It's like when you're blocked by him, you get like pissed off right away. Yeah. Like, but do you think they help or hurt him with how they handle him?
I think in the big picture, they're kind of a non-factor. Again, I think that's like a super hardcore fair thing. Derek does, I mean, on the local level, Derek does enough to hold the fan base back with some of the stuff he says. Mm-hmm. You know, he's going to say kind of what he thinks he needs to say, but when they start losing, he comes a little unraveled. So I would love to see him just be above the fray, but, you know, you can tell he reads his stuff, which, dude, yeah. Don't punch down. What's the point? It's not going to help you. But on the contract thing, I agree with RJ to a certain extent. I would have spent the last couple of months, and they may have done it. I would have spent the last couple of months coming up with game plans to try to get one of the guys who might be available, who's an upgrade. And I would be working on flipping Derek Carr to get some of those picks that I need to go get Aaron Rodgers or Russell Wilson or even Deshaun Watson.
Yeah. You're totally right. The Raiders panned themselves in a corner. Like they had no decent backup plan. Like they didn't have any sort of backup young quarterback they were kind of developing.
Well, that's true.
Nathan right. Peterson and Marcus Mariota. Like Mariota's going to be gone.
But RJ, it's not done yet. The combine's coming up. No movements happened yet. Rodgers hasn't made a decision. Really, Russell Wilson hasn't put forth that stuff that he started to put forth last year, which is get me the hell out of here. And this
he's the one to be there. Go. He doesn't want to be there.
I don't think he does. And Deshaun Watson, we don't know. I mean, I think it's going to get cleared up here in the next 2 months. And then right there's 3 guys who might be available. And then the other part of it is, I mean, at a minimum, you have to go around the league and you go to these teams that are in trouble with their quarterbacks. Buccaneers, kind of out of nowhere, right? Bucks, Colts, Steelers, right?
Mm-hmm.
Hell, maybe Seattle, if the Russell Wilson thing, even if he goes somewhere else. And then at that point, if there's a market of 4 or 5 teams that want Carr, what do they get back? Like, is it a second and a third? Well, then no. Then I'm not interested in that. Are we talking a first? Multiple first? And then all of a sudden I've got some ammo here where I can make the upgrade to these other quarterbacks. So I still think there's a lot of stuff to to play out. And then there's a negotiation. Like, are you given? I'm fine. If Derek Carr, adds $35 million a year for two additional years onto this contract, and it's all guaranteed, right? 3 years and like whatever it is, $92 million. It's guaranteed. Is he going to take that? Does he believe there are other teams out there that are going to give him like a 5-year deal for, what would that be? Like $175 million a year. Because I don't think I would do that.
Well, it all depends. Would Derek Carr play next season on a non-guaranteed contract? Year five.
No way he's going to do that.
That's what I'm saying.
And like, as an organization, I wouldn't. I'd probably tell him, you're an idiot. Don't do that. Mm-hmm. Here's guaranteed money. Here's $93, $95 million guaranteed for the next 3 years. We've seen with Carson Wentz, like there's the special guys in this league. There's five or six of them. They get 5, 6, 7 year deals. The Carson Wentzes of the world and Derek Carr, I don't know, man. I don't think I would give him a 5-year deal. Not with most of it guaranteed. I'll give you 3 guaranteed.
Yeah, he already got his 5-year deal. It's like, look, man, you got your 5-year deal. And I feel like I understand RG's going to say all he wants to say about all these excuses that he has. I'm talking about Derek Carr specifically, himself and his play. What I've seen from his play. I've seen every one of his snaps on coaching film. No crowd noise. I'm not tied to any type of result or anything. Just his throws. I've seen who he is. I've seen what his strengths are and his deficits are. He's not that guy that you can just be a centerpiece to make erase a lot of mistakes on your roster. He's not that guy. He needs a lot more. And to give him that much money over that many years, that's just not the move for me.
Yeah. By the way, I just want to say real quick, you notice what I'm talking about here, right? It's length of deal and it's total money.
Yes.
Year by year thing. Like people are going to start getting in this argument of like 30 million, 35 million, 40 million. Everyone's got to stop doing this. 99.9% of the people, most people cover this. You're not capologists. All right. So we really have no fucking idea how any of this works, because if we did, then everyone who told me the Rams, oh, they mortgage their future. They're screwed. Like, they're not screwed. They keep winning. And the Chiefs keep signing guys for 18 mil plus, and Mahomes is coming up on 45. Mahomes'
cap hit was like 7.5 million this year. How the fuck did that happen?
Well, that too.
On a half a billion dollar deal.
Right. Like, yeah, he's making all this money, but it's cap friendly somehow. So, like, when people start talking about the numbers, you don't know what you're talking about. You're not NFL capologist, which, by the way, I don't ever want to hear that excuse again with the Raiders about the cap this or the cap that, because you got a team in your division that makes it work. You got a team down the road that makes it work. Mm-hmm. If you don't have someone who's good enough with the cap to fudge the numbers or get around the system, then get someone else.
Yep.
Well, it's the last thing with Carr. Again, I just think pure economics of the quarterback. Like, take Derek Carr's face off of the number 4 jersey and just be like, all right, you know, top 12, whatever we want to rank him quarterback, right? 5-year deal, because 3 or 4 years from now, it's going to be a steal, just like it is this time. That's just the economics of how quarterbacks aren't getting cheaper, right? When Joe Burrow's contract comes up, Justin Herbert's contract comes up, he's going to be $50, $60 million a year quarterbacks in the next few seasons. Watch.
My worry would be at 36, 37 years old, 34, 35, whatever it is, 35, 36. Is he, just because we've got some old quarterbacks who played really well, past, you know, 35, doesn't mean every guy who passes 35 is
he's only 30, right? So if he does he's
35,
which is
you know, I worry about the fumbling. That's another thing. I don't know how he cleans it. I don't know how you fix that.
The thing is my thing is not just the fumbling. My big thing is the touchdowns to total turnover ratio. It's not great. He was 24 to 21 this year. And it's like you have to take a look at that too. And RG's like, oh, now you're just playing mental gymnastics and blah, blah, blah. I was like, no, dude, that's huge. That's huge when you look at it. If you look trying to make this guy elite quarterback, pay him all this money. Yeah, if he turns the ball over, great. Is he throwing a lot of touchdowns? Like, what's the trade-off here, you know? It's like, look, I'm saying this. You got a guy coming in here. You got Josh McDaniels coming in here. He's the quarterback guy. He's the offensive guy. You don't want to saddle this guy. It's great to say, yeah, give him 5 years when it's not your fucking job on the line. Okay? You got a guy in here, and if Derek Carr proves, if you give him a 2-year extension, so his year he has plus two more. If he proves to you in a year or 2 years that, hey, this is the guy that I think I can build this guy moving forward, then pay him whatever the hell he wants because he's going to be worth it if he's that guy. Pay him more because he's going to be that guy at that point. If he's not that guy at that time, then you can move on from him then, and you're not tied to those extra years on a guy that's not going to be that guy.
If he's not the guy, then you trade him on that five-year deal. We see it happen every single season. Quarterbacks that like are floundering in one place.
And then you have an older quarterback who's making a ton of money, who's had a second time around, and who's going to want that contract, RJ?
It happens every single season. Every season, some quarterback doesn't work out somewhere and goes somewhere else.
A mid-30s quarterback
yes.
who's washed out again.
A 32-year-old who's a third in the MVP, three-time Pro Bowler.
Now you're talking like Derek Carr's boyfriend, okay? Chill.
What did I say that wasn't true?
What I'm saying, see, look, you're looking at it from this perspective. You have to talk about it from 2 years from now. From that Derek Carr's perspective, not from right now.
It happens every single season.
You're just saying the positive.
Every single season.
So who's that this year? Who's that this year then?
Well, it was Carson Wentz last season.
Who's that this year? Who's that this year?
It'll probably be...
Okay, let's move on. Thank you.
It happens every season.
Who's that this
year? All right, we got...
Exactly.
What's your last question for Cofield, Soto, before... You know, these ringers, radio hosts come in and take his job in Las Vegas. We've been hearing about. Right. This is your last chance. Right.
Please help me out. This is real for my next job.
Oh, man. I don't know. I'm at a loss right now. RJ got me fired up again. I'm just like that. I'm just excited.
Don't have a question for a guest?
No, man. We talked about everything I wanted to talk about.
How about what would you set? What would you – we don't know what the player movement is going to be, so you have a little flexibility here. But based on the schedule and based on what happened this year and based on the fact that there were, minus 65 in point differential, which I will explain in a second, is a bullshit number. What would you put their over-under win total at for next year? They won 10 this year. They were 7.5, 8, you know, going into this last year.
Yeah.
The division is tough. I mean, does Denver get a quarterback? Because that changes everything, right?
I would say 9.
We play what? Who do we play? We play the NFC North, right?
NFC
South and who's the other division that we play next season? NFC South, because I know we're going to New Orleans.
I will tell you this: when you look down the ledger of games out of division, just like this year, there's a lot of shaky quarterback situations, unknown quarterback situations. They may solve it, but there's a lot of unknown quarterback situations. I'll just say, I don't know why I keep saying I'll just say it. If you post a 9 right now, a bet under.
Okay.
I know this is going to sound ridiculous. I think 8 is still the number. 8.5 would be a little risky for the books because they'd get a lot of over money. Now, that all said, if they fill some of the holes on their roster and the quarterback situation is stable or better, then I think they can win 10 games again. I think they can do exactly what they did this year. And I mentioned the point differential, which so many people lean on. Minus 65, it shows they're not that good. They were minus 66 against the Chiefs.
Yeah, the Chiefs game. Two games.
Now, you know, plus one for the other 15 games. That ain't great. That's not a sign of like a 12-win team.
Yeah.
But they also suffered all those injuries. Gruden, Ruggs, Arnett, the offensive line was beat to shit. So I'm
Waller out for a third of the season.
And Waller having a down year for what, you know, the standard he set. So I'm actually bullish on them. I would – McDaniel's first year, I would be disappointed if they're at least not in the playoff hunt, and they should be at least at 9 wins. And I still think they have some upside. So I don't think what they did this year was entirely phony.
There you go, Soto. He asked your question and answered it for you.
That's why he's a professional.
I was trying to help out. I forget.
You can knock off one guy on the list, Cofield, of people you're worried about taking your job, because you might have just taken Soto's with that last question and answer. Well done.
You can have it.
More jobs. I don't know. I saw him smack you around pretty good there when you were all stumbly. So I don't know.
He gets loud. He gets real loud for sure.
I don't know if it was a complete loss for him. I think he kind of battered you a bit at the end.
It's like one of those point differential things. I got the W, but he got the
He got,
okay.
He got a big. If it was like 16 seconds.
What a heel move! Archie's like he's like one of those like heel wrestlers from like back in the old territory days. It's like, nah, you didn't beat me. Like,
I try to have a rational level conversation, and Soto just gets super emotional, and so I just lean back and let him win. So we can move on.
He just pulled stuff out.
He's taking poor Cofield away from his beer for 45 minutes. Pick up Cofield and Company every Monday through Friday on ESPN Las Vegas, 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern, late night pod. Follow him on Twitter as well, at Steve Cofield. Steve, this was great. Thanks for coming on.
You guys are awesome. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Steve Cofield. What a legend. What a legend.
A Las Vegas staple.
I use the word legend. He uses the word staple. And it's probably somewhere in the middle.
Icon.
A lot of words, a lot of adjectives. Work with that. So one of the big obvious additions we have to make on our offense is a true number one, preferably X wide receiver, right? Supposed to be Henry Ruggs, our speedster. Obviously, you know what happened there. Brian Edwards, hey, he can be the guy that fills in. Can't bank on him making it, you know, getting better. Zay Jones, I like for super cheap as a backup. He should not be starting on a regular basis at wide receiver for him. So we got to go somewhere and get it. So I compiled a list, 11 wide receivers that they're not all free agents. I'm not talking draft. We'll have another one for draft, but players that the Raiders can go after as free agents. And I did a poll question on this on Twitter. Share it with you here. Which number one receiver option would you want? And I listed four, I think, of the ones that people were talking about the most. Davante Adams at 30 mil, Allen Robinson at 16 mil, Chris Godwin 16 mil, Juju Smith-Schuster at 8 mil, and other, and had a bunch of comments below. Davante Adams, obviously the sexy name. That $30 million price tag wasn't scaring away a lot of people, Soto.
Steep.
Steep price tag. For a wide receiver, 30 mil? You'd be mad if we played a quarterback 30 mil. Wide receiver, 30 mil. That's a tough one.
No, I'd pay Carr 30. 30 would be good. Okay. I'd be cool with that.
All right, so I went through all of them. Number one, Davante Adams. He's the best receiver available. I think that's almost universally agreed to. Top three in the NFL. He clearly already jives with Carr. He's the most expensive, and he's 29, which isn't old, but it's old-ish for a wide receiver. Mm-hmm. And also comes down to a lot of other elements, like does Green Bay franchise him? And we all kind of have to wait around for Rodgers to make his decision because he's like the domino that tips off a bunch of other things, including Davante Adams.
Yeah, I mean, if Davante Adams hits free agency, which there's rumblings around that Green Bay might let him hit free agency just for whatever reason, and they don't want to franchise him, I would definitely have a long conversation with his representation to see what he's looking for. Because honestly, he's the best wide receiver to hit the market in I don't know how long. He's that damn good, and he will change. He would change the scope of your offense automatically having him on your team. He would automatically make your offense better. He would automatically make the rest of your receiving core better. And he would change every defense and how they scheme against you. He's that fucking good. Having him on your team will definitely be a huge bump and definitely not going to be in the high teens, points per game having a Davante Adams on your team.
Hey, Chiefs, Broncos, and Chargers, you have to defend Davante Adams, Darren Waller, Hunter Renfro, and Josh Jacobs.
Good luck. Good
fucking luck. Next one, Allen Robinson, who has been just dying on the vine in Chicago. Poor guy. Like, we've seen the talent, just haven't had a quarterback anywhere near him. Bears don't have a ton of cap space. He's coming off a shit season because, like I said, shit quarterback play. And he'd be that, like, possession receiver that we want in the red zone. Like, he'd be a really good guy to help our red zone issues. We're looking at probably $15 million a season for him.
I really like Allen Robinson, dude. I really like him. He is a chain mover. If you need to get that, catch, he's got you. He's a big bodied receiver. He's faster than you think. And he's not afraid to go over the middle. He gets those balls. He's a good, like I said, he's a good red zone target. And he's a good get, man. He's not quite the elite talent that you would have when you get like a Davante Adams or some of the other guys on this list. But for what you're looking for as far as specifically for this offense to improve upon, which is maybe some third down conversions, some red zone conversions, this guy is definitely going to help you out.
I think he's much better than that. I think he's the number two guy on this list. We just haven't been able to see it because he's had no quarterback throwing to him. But we'll see. We'll see what happens when there's actual arm throwing at him. Chris Godwin. We know Tampa Bay is going to try hard to keep him. They have to try to get a new quarterback with Tom Brady gone. Without Godwin there, it's going to be hard to lure somebody there. Coming off of ACL injury, he's going to not be cheap. About $16 million, I'm guessing, per season for him. But he's also a slot receiver. So do we move him outside? Does Renfro go outside? Do they both play? There's got to be some kind of Tetris going on if we pick him up.
Well, the thing is if you take a look at the offenses of New England, their receivers move around. So, Renfro played outside this year a little bit because he had to. And, it's very similar-ish to Gruden where you're kind of positionless wide receivers. You kind of just get moved around a little bit. Similar, not quite as extreme as that, as we've seen with McDaniels. But Tampa Bay, I'm not too worried about Tampa Bay re-signing him because they have some cap issues themselves. They're gonna have to make a lot of strong decisions over there. Maybe they keep him and dump some other guys. Who knows? But definitely, he's got the speed coming off an injury. You know, we've seen. Modern medicine, man. These guys coming off ACLs are coming back that first. Usually the common thing was, ACL, you're done. You're screwed. You're never coming back.
Now it's coming back stronger.
Yeah. It's like the ACL. It's like, okay, it's not that first year back. It's that second year back. That's the one that you have. Now it's like, boom, the first year back and you're the man. So Godwin, man, he's got the hands. He's fast. He runs good routes. He is where he's supposed to be. We'll see, man. We'll see. He's a good receiver. Not the biggest guy. He's a little smaller receiver, but definitely going to be someone that keep an eye on in that top tier receivers that are available.
Moving along, keeping a nice pace here. Mike Williams. He set new career records in receptions, receiving yards last season with the Chargers. It's always nice to steal a Charger. You know, just feels extra. Little extra bonus, you know, get to know what that playbook is, etc. He's that deep threat that we need with Henry Ruggs gone. Looking at about $16 million a year ish for him. But the Chargers might franchise him.
They probably will. When you have a player like Mike Williams, he's the type of player that fits that offense really well. Especially when you have like a Keenan Allen on the team and you have Cook on the team and you have all these different weapons on that team, you need that deep threat as well. And also he's a big bodied receiver too. Yeah. So if you put that, put those two together, Justin Herbert needs that big wide receiver down the middle. Also, that deep threat in the end zone. You don't want to take that type of weapon that's almost like a security blanket away from a young quarterback because he's comfortable with them. And if I was a Chargers, I wouldn't let him go.
Juju Smith-Schuster, Long Beach.
Strong Beach. House.
He turned down the Chiefs deal last season, which was turned out to be stupid. He's going to get pennies. You can get him for probably $8 million or so. He's only 25 years old, but he's been kind of inconsistent. He had that amazing rookie year, and each season is looking like that rookie year was more of a fluke and less of like a true example of what he's going to be.
Well, when you take a look at that rookie year, that was probably the last of the prime AB years. Mm-hmm. So,
Roethlisberger too.
Well,
he was decent.
Well, the thing is he still had receivers around him that still produced at a high level with mm-hmm. Roethlisberger. So it wasn't really that, I think, so much because Roethlisberger was still able to get the ball out and get the ball and spread the ball around. But he is, if you want to take a look at, he's not a speed burner. He is kind of like a Allen Robinson light. He's not quite as big as Allen Robinson.
The Diet Pepsi of Allen Robinson.
Yeah, but he is a possession receiver. He can get yards after catch. He would be a good get. I think he would be a good get. He'd be a lot cheaper, a lot younger. That shoulder issue, that worries me, especially in football. Shoulder issues tend to creep up again later on. That's going to be a big one. That's going to be an issue one. That's going to trust your medical staff on that one.
Next up, Antonio Brown.
Oh man, I don't think so, dude. No, let's just move on.
I slay me. Brandon Cooks. This is a rare one, not a free agent, signed with Houston, but I included him in this list because there's been some, I would say soft chatter that Houston might be looking to move on from him. Remember, he played under McDaniels in New England 2017, mm-hmm. led the Patriots in targets, 114, second in catches, 65, receiving yards over 1,000, touchdown receptions was 7. He's currently in a 5-year, $81 million contract, and he's owed $12.5 million next season.
I'm not too high on Brandon Cooks, honestly. No? I don't know. I mean, that target to reception ratio is pretty rough, man. 114 targets and 65 receptions. That's kind of rough. He has injury concerns. On top of the injury concerns, he also has concussion issues. So you put that together along with he's not the biggest receiver. He's actually kind of a small. He's really fast still. I don't know, man. I think that he got that big of a contract from Houston because you have to give somebody some money. You have to spend some the cap on somebody. Mm-hmm. And he's not a slouch by any means. I'm just not that big on Brandon Cooks.
Speaking of injuries, DJ Chark. So he missed 22 of 65 games. He's missed 33% of his NFL games. He's so injury. He missed 13 games last season, fractured ankle in week 4. Mm-hmm. He's at the Jags currently. The Jags really need a wide receiver, so they may franchise him. But I think he wants out. He's only 25 years old. 6'3", 200 pounds, ran a 4.3 40. We could probably get him for like 12 mil. And when we did the poll, he was the one in the most mentioned, like the others section. Mm-hmm. Like he's the one most mentioned. Raider fans love him. If it weren't for the injury problems, I'd say it's a no-brainer go after him. But missing a third of your games and you're only getting older.
Well, the reason why he dropped so far in his draft year was because he missed his last season in college mm-hmm. because he was injured. Yep. And that was the big concern about DJ Chark. His production on the field, once he's on the field, is not in question at all. Yep. He's a very talented receiver, and he's very competitive, and you can see it on the field. He's super fiery. He's going to be – if I can see him in silver and black, and I could see him being a big contributor to the Raiders and a big – kind of like that Raiders mentality. But unfortunately, he just gets hurt too often, man. I think that – I don't think that that's the kind of person you want to – when you have a big hole to fill, he's not the kind of starter you want to have. If you want to put him at like a third receiver or like the old Zay Jones position, okay, fine, a third, fourth receiver, something like that, great. This is a guy that he could contribute when he's there, but unfortunately, he's just you can't count on him. The best ability is availability.
We're looking for a number one, not a yeah. – it'd be nice to have him.
Yeah.
The other guy that's still under contract, Calvin Ridley in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. He needs a fresh start. Atlanta's going to be resetting here any minute. Another guy that was injured. He missed 12 games because of mental health issues. He took basically a whole season off to deal with mental health. Not that that's ever a good thing, but the Raiders have made mental health like a bigger priority than any other of the other 31 NFL teams, mm-hmm. right? Such a big, they have literally mental health meetings, Darren Waller, Max Crosby, they've got all these, such a big part of what makes the Raiders Raiders. It seems like a place where he could find kind of that healing or a good environment that he wants to be in. He's owed $11 million in next season under his fifth year option. You're in a 4.4440 time. He comes with some question marks, but I feel like he's a puzzle piece that fits almost exactly what the Raiders need.
The big question with Calvin Ridley, and I'm not discounting mental health issues or mental health problems or mental health episodes, is do you want to play football? Mm-hmm. Right? You have players like on our team, like Crosby and Waller. They've had their own issues, right? But they turn to football as their solace. Like, okay, football is my foundation. I'm going to go through these issues, but you know what? I'm going to turn to football to be my center point, to be my rock.
If I don't get this under control, I lose football.
I lose this.
Not, Oh, if this gets under control, I don't have to play football.
Exactly. Different mentality. Exactly. Does Calvin Ridley want to play football? And that's the thing you have to ask, because if you sit down with Calvin Ridley and say, look, man, you have what we need. We want you here. We have, sitting next to me right here is Darren Waller. Sitting next to me is Max Crosby. We have this group and we want to put our arms around you. We want to bring you in here and we want to show you we've been where you've been. We're going to be here with you. But when you have those episodes, when we want those issues, we want you to come in here and have us bring you in closer. We don't need you going away. Yeah. We need you coming in. Do you want to play football, yes or no? And if you're kind of humming and hawing, we don't need you.
Next up, Odell Beckham. Talk about a wild card. I wonder if the Raiders will kind of look at this as sort of an Antonio Brown, but you also got to remember it's a whole new regime there, so they're not like burned by Brown the same way. At the Raiders, well, they also know Brown in New England, so God only knows what's going on. Never mind. He went off in the playoffs this season. You got to imagine he wants to go back to the Rams, right? You win a Super Bowl,
he'll be back.
You probably want to stay there. He is coming off a torn ACL. It'll cost about $14 million next season.
Yeah, he's going back to the Rams. They'll figure it out. That. Yeah. He's just going back. Just what it is.
Last one, Michael Gallup. Also, coming off a torn ACL. A lot of torn ACLs in the final years of contracts going around. He's only 26. Obviously, he got that big play potential that we've been lacking once we lost Henry Ruggs. And I feel like if any team can lose a Michael Gallup type guy and be okay, it's the Cowboys, right? With basically three number one receivers going on there in Dallas, he'd cost about $12 million a season.
It's a sneaky pickup. I like Michael Gallup. I would put him probably fifth on this list.
Interesting.
Him or Calvin Ridley, depending on Ridley's kind of mental state, depending on how important football is to him. But I do like Michael Gallup. As far as the money goes, I think that's a little bit rough for Michael Gallup. He's never had to be that number one guy. He's always had that the luxury of having Cooper on the other side, Zeke Elliott taking up a lot of eight-man boxes and stuff like that, lot of one-on-one coverage and stuff like that. So that's why I'm not too high on him being our number one, because he hasn't been a number one. Ridley's been a number one. Robinson's been a number one. Chark's been a number one. These guys have been number ones, right? So if we're gonna sign somebody to be our number one, I want them to have been a number one somewhere else.
You're my number one, Soto. You won't be anyone else's number one.
You'd love it.
Ready to do some what-a winbacks?
Yes, sir.
Kerry Williams. A lot of Raider Nation is getting this new GM and coaching staff are miracle draft guys. It wasn't McDaniel or Zeke that was doing the picks for New England. It was Belichick and a guy named Ernie Adams. And that's the million-dollar question. That's the thing we've been bantering back and forth on forever is, are we getting a core of what made the Patriots with Mick Ziegler, or was it all Belichick and everyone else just kind of got the benefit of it? Like, it's that way with the offense. It's that way with personnel. It's that way with drafting. It's that way with contracts. It's that way with culture. It's that way with discipline. This is just another example of it, right? What are we getting? How much of it was Mick Ziegler?
We're going to find out soon enough. What I know of people who are good leaders is, and this is where it differs. The style in which you teach is different, but you always teach. You always impart your knowledge onto others. You always try to give your knowledge to other people. And now, again, like I said, how you share that knowledge to other people can differ, but you always try to do it. So how he evaluates people, how he stacks them up, how he separates them, how he does his draft, how he makes it up, that information, that's all been shared. So we have a pretty good idea that after all these years, he's kind of been schooled on how to work in, a modern NFL draft room.
I hope so. Next one, Richard White. This guy got eviscerated in the comments, and you'll see why. Raider fan here. I like Hunter Renfrow, but he is the most overrated player on the team, in my opinion.
Oh, Jesus.
If Waller hadn't missed half the season and Ruggs didn't do what he did, and if Jacobs wasn't hurt, he wouldn't have soaked up 80% of the first read targets. Is he making a point, Soto?
He is.
I don't think he is.
Well, no, he is. And this is kind of like the double-edged sword when you're Derek Carr's favorite target. Is when you get that trust with him, you're going to get fed a lot because Derek Carr trusts you. And he's, if he knows where you're going to be and he knows, you know, and you work a lot with him. I mean, dude, he made Zay Jones like a viable player in the NFL. Okay. Like, just because he knows where he's going to be.
Yeah.
So if you're capable, like Renfro is, you're a good player like Renfro is, and you get the volume and you have hands, like, yeah. I'm not saying he's overrated. I'm not saying that whatsoever. But if you're getting the volume of targets, yeah. Is he overrated? I don't think he's overrated. Did he benefit from all these things happening? Of course he did.
Hunter Renfro became a Pro Bowler this season. Now, when there's a vacuum that's left by losing Ruggs and Waller, why wasn't it Bryan Edwards that filled that vacuum? Why wasn't it Zay Jones that filled that vacuum? Why wasn't anybody else that filled that vacuum? Because Hunter Renfro's good. Because Hunter Renfro's better than those guys. That's my point. Like, you're right. Like, he got more targets, obviously, because you don't have Ruggs and Waller. But to say, like, that's the only reason he succeeded?
Oh, I like, didn't say that. I'm not saying you are.
I'm talking to the commenter, Dick White over here.
Like, Dick White. Here's the deal, Dick White.
He stepped up, right?
Next man up. He stepped up and he gained Derek Carr's trust. And we all know, and we've seen in the past, if Derek Carr trusts you, he will feed you. And he will continue to feed you until you fail him. And it just so happens that Hunter Renfro didn't fail him. So he kept feeding him.
And it's not like he did anything different this season, at the end of the season, beginning of the season, or last season. He just got more targets.
He just got fed more.
He didn't do anything different. He's got more targets. He still played great. Last one, Dub 9 Raider. So this is a comment on my solo show. So you do a solo show over the weekend. I do solo shows on Tuesdays now to you know, add a different. Good show, man. Although I do appreciate the RG versus Soto dynamic. That's what makes it my favorite Raiders podcast. Not trying to compare you guys. Not trying to compare, but you guys are doing it much better than the other podcasters. Oh, thank you. Way more professionalism. Even when Soto states that RJ literally blows Carr, even then, a higher level of professionalism. See, I would say we're never more professional than when you're saying I'm blowing Carr. But when you're talking about fellatio, I think that's peak Autumn Windbags.
It's that level of expose. You know, nowhere else are you going to know who sucks Derek Carr's dick.
I mean, it's not like it's a wart on the body of the Autumn Windbags. I'd say it's the tits on the Autumn Windbags.
It's the tip. It's the very tip of the nipple.
I can't think of a better way to end a show. And with that, knock on wood if you're with me. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Autumn Windbags. We really appreciate it. Big shout out to Steve Cofield for joining us. Thank you. Round of applause. You were great. Always love it when he comes on. Also remember to check out our YouTube channel. A lot of extra content on there. You only get a podcast once a week, but almost daily we put out stuff on the YouTube page, so make sure you check that out. Until next time, later.